Welcome to the course. We are on a hole that is a par three, and it is an uphill hole. There is also a low ceiling, about, let's give it about 80 to 100 feet off the tee. You got to go like underneath some branches, but still
one at Olympus.
Oh my goodness. That was the fastest.
You know what the craziest thing was?
What?
I was thinking if it was my hole, I was going to do that.
We are spiritually connected.
No, we are. That's 100% the case.
Wow, that I felt like it was the most random hole possible to think of right now, but it wasn't.
I was thinking, why not go to the start of the season? Like last week, we did Vermont, and I was thinking, what would be like the most random course?
That's what I was thinking.
There's Olympus. Oh my gosh. Wow.
Oh, well, welcome back, everyone. Crushed Pepper episode 25 is here.
25. Wow. 25. We're going to look back on this one day and be like, wow, we did 25 episodes.
25 is something. Joey? Joey and Simon are over here in beautiful Michigan. And Eagle is over there in beautiful Colorado.
Yeah, we're both in beautiful places.
Do you think it's warmer here in Michigan or Colorado right now?
Definitely Colorado.
Probably the same, honestly. It was like a high of 75 yesterday.
Here was
58. That's warmer than here.
Oh, really? Wow.
Oh, it's cold here.
Damn.
Last week was a mirage as far as the weather is concerned because it has cooled considerably.
This has to be the coldest D-Glow of all time. By far, by like 20 degrees.
I have D-Glows from the past in my brain that will scar me for my whole life because of how humid and hot it was. And this is the opposite, as Simon has already alluded to. But fall is officially on the frontier. It's right here. And it was windy. There was even a little bit of rain yesterday at the end of my round for like 30 or 40 seconds. And it is very different than what we have been playing in.
Yeah, you got a little taste of Idlewild. It was like pretty good weather, like mid-70s. Is that about right?
Idlewild must have been, as good as possible weather-wise.
Well, I think last week when I was practicing the D-Glow course, it was perfect. It was like 72, no clouds in the sky, and not humid every day. Just enough to like break a sweat, but nothing more.
All right, this episode's going to be epic. We are done with the weather topic.
Too bad we didn't have Emily Weatherman on to give us a better breakdown.
Nice. So what's going on, Eagle?
Well, home's great. I am not at D-Glow, obviously. The plan was to be at D-Glow, but I decided to stay back another, 11 days before heading out to Vermont. My wrist has been bothering me a little bit. Once I came home from Ledgestone, I played around, and just the right side of my hand and wrist kind of like started acting up. The ulnar nerve, which is feeling funky, and while it is getting better, I've actually played around yesterday, and it wasn't bad at all. But when it was time to go, it just really didn't feel like it was a good idea to head out and play. and just decided to stay back home and get a little bit more R&R before finishing out the year. Now I'll leave this coming Thursday and head to Vermont and finish out the year, play 3/4 events, hopefully, to put a cap on the season. But the time at home has been tremendous and honestly much needed, both physically and mentally. I touched on a little bit last podcast, but the season's long, and if things don't really go your way, then you can really feel down on yourself. And luckily, I am starting to not feel down on myself, which that's always a good feeling.
I felt down on myself yesterday.
Yeah. Oh. I haven't really been paying attention to D-Glow, but my dad told me that you took an 8. That's all I know.
It was a snowman for the ages.
Do you want to talk about it?
Yeah, no problem. I started off with 2 great birdies, circle two putt. But I just had a weird vibe in the air that something was off. Like, I just felt like something bad is going to happen this round, because like everything was like too good to be true. And then I just slightly turned over my tee shot on hole 3. There was like a little headwind, crosswind, but I kind of thought I was planning for it. But my disc ever so slightly just drifted into the right OB. And then what once disc? You do that, I threw my overstable time lapse, which has been kind of my go-to driver since Europe. And it just kind of drifted right on me for the first time ever. And I think it was almost actually good enough where it would have like trickled some branches maybe and kicked back to inbounds, but just didn't. And then once you go right OB, then you're faced with the decision, do you want to risk to try to save your par, or are you just going to play smart, lay up, tap in for bogey, which is a pretty simple up and down unless you're Joey. So I decided to go for it, obviously, because I don't lay up for bogeys. I just mentally can't. And I shanked it straight right into the trees again. I advanced like 30 feet on my second shot. And then I was faced with the same decision again. If I go for it and try to save a double bogey, or if I lay up and just take a triple. So I decided to go for it and threw it OB left. And then I
to go in right. Yep.
And I was, well, both the discs I would have thrown were in the woods, like 200 feet in front of me. So I couldn't throw the disc I actually wanted. So I was throwing basically my third option for like a distance driver, which is a newer time lapse. It's just only been in the bag for 3 days and I didn't really know how it flies.
And what's the wind doing
right now? It was relatively calm, maybe slight left to right headwind, but nothing like too crazy. And
that's how it happens.
Then I had like a 90 footer for 7 and almost made it. It like went off the top band and tap in 8. And then I played like absolutely phenomenal the rest of the round. Probably the best putting I've ever done in my entire life. 5 circle 2 putts. I made like a 120 footer on the last hole. But I also got a double bogey on this freaking hole 16 again. I hate that.
Best
hole
putting
so much.
Of his life, but he can't make the drop zone putt from 16.
I putted it OB twice already this tournament from there.
I know. I laid so it up tragic. Once. I laid it up the first round and I made it the second round.
Yeah, so that 8 was a bit depressing. But I feel like I don't know when I found this zone, maybe after Worlds or something. I feel like I'm really detached from results right now, which is nice. So I don't really get mad or end of the world feelings. It's kind of just like, yeah, it's a bit frustrating and a little depressing. But overall, I feel like currently I feel like the results don't really matter, which is nice to think like that. Because I don't know. Do they matter?
I mean, I took a 7 on that hole, the same round. And as my dad told me on the phone call afterwards, he said, the way I know that your game has changed is that 2 or 3 years ago, you would have probably ended up shooting like 10 or 12 over par, but you shot one under from that point on for the rest of the round. And like, I feel the same amount of detachment from results right now as well. Like, I took a 7 and I was just like, whatever. And then I proceeded to throw my best drive ever on hole 4 that I had ever thrown, even in practice. And I got just mega screwed through the trees because it like bounced me right into the fringe. And I was like totally blocked by that pine tree. And I threw a forehand cut roller and it bounced over all three of the logs perfectly all the way up into circle one. And it's just like, I just didn't care. Like, I just was so like detached that then I think I feel like without my ability to just like separate from bad luck, like I wouldn't have been able to pull off some of those things. Like, I wouldn't have been able to get the good luck that happened on that little spot there.
There's a fine line you're dancing between not caring and detaching yourself from results.
You definitely have a scar now, though.
Huh?
You have a scar. Next time, when you're playing Deagle next year or Worlds, you're going to think, oh, I had an 8 on hole 3.
Well, I have to play today still.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll find out.
So, well, the one great thing about taking a huge number on a hole is that it's so unbelievably easy to gain strokes on a hole, and then you kind of feel better. Even if I like take a par or a bogey on that hole today, I still feel like, oh yeah, I still gained 3 strokes from my round yesterday, and I still ended up shooting a 4 down, even with 6 bogey strokes.
That's really good.
So I know if I just clean up my insane mistakes, I'm right there.
And it was super windy too, right?
Not as bad.
Day
2
was windy. Yesterday, not too bad.
Okay.
But there was definitely wind yesterday. Like on hole 3, my fireball flipped over for the first time all weekend and in practice. That green and white one just rolled right. So I'd never seen that happen.
That beat up one?
Yeah, but I mean, I was more worried about going OB left every time I threw that fireball.
Yeah.
And it didn't want it. But I was only out of bounds by 2 centimeters when I actually got up there to see it. So it must have skirted the entire way, all the way up, and then right at the end or something, as it was trying to fade back in, it caught something and just dropped straight down. Because the spotter was... You know how sometimes they go up to you and they're like, I'm sorry. You're like, thanks for spotting. And they're like, yeah, thanks for being here. Sorry that it was out of bounds.
I hate when people apologize.
I know. That's what he said that to me.
I'm glad they apologize because it's definitely their fault.
Yes. Well, they don't really apologize for anything they did. They apologize that we have to go through what we're going through.
I feel bad about this and... It's one of my pet peeves. It's like when you shank a shot so bad and it's like immediately OB, and then the spotter just waves the flag so enthusiastically. Like, I know they're just doing their job, but it's just like, yeah, I know, I see it. And they're supposed to do it, but I'm like, can you just not wave it like that when I throw a shot that terrible?
Yeah. Oh, there's also this tournament again. I mean, complaining about volunteers is like next level weird thing to do. But it's not their volunteers' fault. They just do what they're being told to do.
Exactly.
When they flag discs that are in the fairway, so you throw a shot in the fairway clearly, and the spotter runs up, puts a flag next to your disc, so you find it. You're just like, okay, why exactly is there a flag next to my disc now?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's a very weird thing to complain about.
No. I share some similar feelings.
Do you guys remember the most badass spotter moment of all time was at D-Glow? I don't know if you remember, but it kind of got clipped, and it was a pretty good little Instagram clip. I think I saw it on PDGA Rodman, maybe, or somewhere else. It was the guy on hole 8, which is that pretty short but very technical right to left, and then left to right, uphill, par four, before the tall grass long off the tee was OB. It used to be safe. And he was in charge of, like, marking the discs off the fairway with those little flags, and he had gotten really good at just kind of tossing the flags like darts towards the discs. And there was like this one clip where like two or three discs landed, and the dude just like absolutely nailed them from like from the same spot. He didn't even move, and I think you got to go back to maybe 2021. Somebody go find this and like post it in the comments where we can watch that clip, because that is an all-time spotter moment.
Here's a question. Have either of you ever volunteered to be a spotter at a tournament?
No.
You?
I have, yes.
How?
When I was a kid, Johnny Roberts tournament. And I loved it because it was like this little blind downhill hole with a creek right behind it. I'd like be the most dramatic flagger ever.
You got
like,
to ruin like, people's day.
Yeah, I would like gradually like bring up the red flag or like just give them so much body language and celebrate when they got green, made it look all sad when they got red. And I feel like I did a great job.
All right, well, another question, follow-up question. If there was one hole on tour you would want to be a spotter at, wow, which one would it be?
Wow. Let's just think. Definitely not hole three at D-Glow.
I would want a hole that has a lot of action.
I'd want a hole that I wouldn't feel bad about if like a player couldn't find their disc, because like hole three, for example, if you throw your disc in there, even if you're a spotter, you don't really have any idea where it goes.
Yeah. That's...
I think I would want to be a spotter on hole eight at Maple Hill. I think that's like the easiest question of all time. And I don't think that that's even possible I think that those jobs must be reserved for some, I mean, that has to be grandfathered in. I guarantee you the people who are spotters at Maple Hill Hole 8 for the tournament, they must have that, and they must have had that, and I don't think they're ever going to give that up. But if I could be a spotter for one day anywhere, it would be on Hole 8 at Maple Hill.
I would want a blind shot, because then the players are like staring at you, waiting for you to say something. So I want some par 3 or 4 where the tee shot is a blind shot with lots of OB. And the players are just desperately waiting for you to show them if you're inbounds or not.
Hole 18 at USDGC. That'd be a good one.
Oh, on the second shot.
On the second shot, yeah.
That's so true.
Because you could throw the perfect shot, or at least perfect to you when you throw it, and it's
yeah,
OB.
That's so true.
That shot sometimes makes so much sense, and other times no sense at all.
And you watch it disappear around the corner. It just goes around the corner, and all you have left is your intuition, and you just look to the right, and you just watch that spotter, and you just pray that your intuition is right.
It's one of the best green flags in disc golf for me, at least.
Totally. It has to be the best.
Good pick right there. Yeah, green of 18 at USDGC is a great pick.
And then you have front row seats to see whoever wins.
I mean, I still think there are suspenseful green and red flags on hole 8 at Maple Hill. Like, there's plenty of spots that are like, you can't tell. Off the
Paul
right
McBeth
side.
Proved it.
Off to the right side, or even like off to the left side short, or if it like hits the trees and like lands right on the edge, there's some suspenseful spots. But also you get to see like just a ton of ace runs. And okay, I think I choose hole 8 because it means I get to interact with like 100 people for the whole day, and maybe some people would just want to like be in a solitary spotting role with flags and their thoughts.
Yeah. Are you an introvert or extrovert?
Right.
We know what Joey is.
No kidding.
We went to an escape room last night.
Yeah. The terminal.
Escape?
It was actually funny because Joey had an invite from Macbeth to go to an escape room at like 9 p.m., which I was like, damn, Paul, party boy.
He booked it like Paul, a couple days ago.
Yeah, but Paul already had like a group he was going with, and you don't want to do an escape room with like 10 people or something. So we got back from dinner and Joey kind of invited us to go to an escape room with Paul, and we were all like, yeah, why not? I haven't done an escape room in like 5 years. So me, Joey, Harry Chase, and Trevin Crow got in the car and drove, called Paul, and we were like, hey, we're on the way, we'll be there. And Paul basically was like, what did he say? Like, Joey was like, I'm with Simon, Trevin, and Harry. And Paul was like, you're lying. You guys are going to get your own room. So we ended up getting our own room, and it was really surprisingly fun.
I think in hindsight, that was probably smart.
Oh, totally smart. Yeah, yeah. Do you think we would have gotten out without Harry? I think Harry was clearly the leader.
Was Jeff Barnes with them?
No, it was Paul and Kevin Kiefer and Mrs. Julio, because Bob is not into escape rooms. He's like claustrophobic. But whenever Macbeth comes to Michigan, him and Mrs. Julio and friends, this time it was Kevin Kiefer, who I'm facing this week in fantasy football. That will be discussed in a second, actually. They did a room. Back to our room. Yes. At the beginning, it started slow, I would say. But once we got into the second room, yeah, it was... I think everybody contributed pretty solidly, but I think at the end, Harry's ADHD and adrenaline sort of like, I think we all would have gotten there, but Harry just like went, he like connected the dots so fast at the end that that's absolutely why we finished with the amount of time we had left, which was like just over 10 minutes left. And according to Paul, the game master, I guess they finished their room while we were still in the room. So he asked the game master, and the game master did not think that our group would make it out at all. And so we impressed Paul by making it out with 10 minutes to spare. But yeah, Harry was zooming at the end for sure. Don't you? I think so.
I think watching people do an escape room, it must be one of the cringest thing you can possibly watch. Because especially if you know exactly how it works, and you just watch them walk around, do like everything wrong, have like one bad idea after the next, and fail basically on every level.
Oh, how much do you think they have to watch?
I think they watch everything.
Really?
Yeah, because they have to. That's like their job, so they can give proper hints when they need to. I think they know kind of at all times exactly what we're doing and what we're not doing. Which is freaking hilarious.
It's probably a pretty fun job.
Yeah, they seemed into it. I'd love to watch escape room.
After the escape room, there was like a mini game that I did. And that was like actually pretty, that took me about 5 or 6 minutes. And that was actually really interesting, like a little maze with a bunch of puzzles. And it earned me a free play into another, like the zombie cage, which is like, was at the entrance of the escape room. And it was like an escape telephone booth. And
you failed, needless to say,
oh my God. I mean, that was... I only had 2 minutes, and I had Harry and Trevin like tapping on the glass like I was some sort of a zoo animal, and I was not in a focused state, but I also didn't quite understand. There were so many different puzzles all around me, but it was great. It was a great evening. I think working as a team was pretty fun, and this was the largest one I had been in. It was 3 rooms in total. And you had to still use that first room the entire time. Like, that's what I didn't realize, too, that I was impressed with. We kept going back there.
I was very impressed with this whole place. But I also don't know much about escape rooms, so...
Maybe cool. We should do more of those. I think that's, like, an easy, fun thing to do for an hour and a half on an evening.
Back in, 2018, 2019, when I was touring with Jeff Korns, him and Paul would be, like, going to, like, escape rooms every night during events. Even, like, multiple escape rooms a day.
They I mean, were, it's like, not bad. Junkies. I was talking with Silva yesterday because after my round, I got picked up by Silva and Maria and in my car, and they said that they had a surprise for me, and that surprise was a 3-hour shopping trip. But during that shopping trip, we were just talking about, like, what do you do to kill time during disc golf weeks? And that isn't, like, so strenuous on you that you are affecting your game, but, like, still something that isn't just, like, being a couch potato. And so Silva actually does, like, she says sometimes she does go shopping, just, like, not even to buy anything. And she ended up, I think we were there for 3 hours, she came away with, like, one thing. What? But I think, like, just, like, the looking and walking around is, like, you know... Everybody has things they do to waste cathartic. Some time. Yeah, I mean, doesn't Ratana search out the thrift shops?
Go to a thrift store for 3, 4, 5 hours and have no sense of time. And I'm, like, envious in a way, just to be like, I wish I could just turn my brain off and do something like that.
I think that's what Maria does when she shops as well. I've seen these videos, I don't know if you've seen them recently, like kind of the couple influencers where the husband like orders the pickup grocery run from Target. So they like do the drive up and he has like the wife in the shotgun seat and she has no idea that she doesn't get to go into the store. And the reactions of the wives who once they realize that like, and the husband's like, I ordered your shopping list. Like I went off the post-it note, got everything you needed. And then she was like, what? No, we have to go in the store.
That reminds me, there's another one that very similar where it's like all the, like, there's a group of guys who like hang out in a minivan. You know what I'm talking about?
That is that's more than just a little video. That is the video that put that whole brand on the map. That's Charlie Behrens. He's like the Wisconsin content guy who's like super, super big. And I think it's like
Dude Dad,
and then there's like one other guy too, You Betcha or something like that. There's three dudes and they're all like massive content creators. It was Dads of Target, but that was like a YouTube short almost, I'm pretty sure, how they started out.
Yeah, those are
hilarious. If you have not seen that YouTube short, Target Dads or something like that, that is a classic internet video.
Well, we're on the escape room topic. Remember when we were in Jonesboro for my birthday?
Axe throwing?
Yeah, but you know how that happened? Remember, you and Ratana were scheming something like a birthday party or like birthday activity for me the day before. And you two were like, we got something really cool you're going to go do. And I'm like, I'm excited for it as long as it's not an escape room. And it was an escape room. That's why you pivoted to axe throwing.
Dude. That was a long time ago. I forgot about that. And we stayed at a VRBO. That's like the only time I've ever stayed at a VRBO. In downtown Jonesboro, within walking distance of that axe throwing place.
That was a pretty cool Airbnb, honestly. I liked that one. But yeah. Memories. Speaking of Jonesboro... Jonesboro is back on the schedule next year. Do we want to talk about the schedule?
Yeah, I think we totally should. What do we think?
What do we think? I want to know what you guys think.
Well, we're at the part of the season right now where you can't imagine ever doing it again. So that being said, I looked at the new schedule and I was extremely happy with it and thought, okay, I think I can do this one more time.
It's probably very, it's a lot easier for you because the first half of the year and most of the year is like East Coast heavy, and that's better for a Massachusetts boy.
Yeah, I mean, if I skip the both West Coast events, I basically never have to go anywhere far.
Right.
Well, Austin is the furthest, probably.
It's cool to see some new events. Like, I would say off the bat, I'm most excited for the event in
Louisiana. New Orleans. Yeah, me too.
Like, it's like actually in New Orleans. I was looking at how far the course is from downtown, and it does not seem far at all. And I was looking at pictures of that place, and it looks really, really cool.
It looks like a dream vlog. It's like a video game disc golf course.
For sure.
What's the tournament they played there this year? Linus was there and Silas was there. I feel like it's something classic, but that was the, I don't remember. It was some tournament down there. It's an A tier every year at that course, and I'm pretty sure Silas made a decent amount of content that you could go watch from. Oh, I don't want to try to say it. Parc des Familles.
I think so.
Okay.
No, that's going to be a really cool one, especially early in the year.
I thought it was like Familier. But the I and the E are both silent, you think?
I'm definitely playing French. It.
Adieu.
Yeah, I'm excited to go back to Florida in the early spring. That's always nice. And I haven't been to...
play hole one at Olympus?
Yeah, I think they changed it. I think I saw a picture recently that they changed the tee pad.
Oh, so it's harder. Great.
Hopefully it's better for backhands now because I can't reach it in forehand to save my life. I'm excited to go back to New Orleans. Okay, how do we say this word properly? New Orleans?
You can say it.
New Orleans is fine.
New Orleans is for like the people from
Massachusetts.
I hear New Orleans. I hear New Orleans. Nolens. NOLA. There's probably some other ways of saying it that's like for locals only.
Well, I haven't been there in 10 years, so I am very excited. It's also, I don't really know much about it, but you hear like things that it's actually kind of a cool place to hang out if you're like into music, into like good food and stuff. So that's always enticing for me.
Have you been there, Joey?
Yes. I was there on spring break with my family in 2018. We stayed in the French Quarter, and yeah, we did all the standard touristy things you would do. And it
did was
my senior year of high school. Oh yeah. With the.
Did you suck on its head?
No, I was not that guy.
Okay, that's a thing. Eagle, do you suck on the heads?
I've eaten crawfish once. I was in Alabama, and Ratana's family did like this huge crawfish boil for my birthday because I never had it. I was curious. And I don't think I was a fan of it.
I wasn't either.
No, the amount of meat you got out of the crawfish was like not worth it to me. It was really weird. I felt like some weird alien being just eating all these like smaller alien beings, and it made me feel slightly uncomfortable. But
it's fun watching the locals do it though. They have like the routine perfectly down. Every little finger movement is perfect to the millimeter, and they just crack them open Yeah, I don't know. But I was still very German back then when I did that, so maybe nowadays I would be better at it.
Well, maybe that's the content that people want when you're down there next year.
You got to go to Jackson Square, and you got to go to the... Man, I can't believe I'm blanking on that restaurant that serves the beignets, the famous New Orleans pastry. It's in Jackson Square. Everybody who knows.
Big Nets?
Beignet.
Oh, beignet. Those are good.
How many people would watch us if we did crushed pepper mukbangs?
That's how you say that word?
Mukbang. Yeah.
I thought it was mukbang.
It's Korean. I'm pretty sure it's mukbang.
What is that?
It's when you eat in front of a camera and like live stream it or post it and have like... The idea is for you, if you're lonely and you want someone to eat with, you can watch somebody else eat while you eat.
That's right. Don't you know Nikocado Avocado?
Yes.
He used to do that.
Were you as shocked as I was?
Yeah, I followed that whole thing way too closely. I don't even know how I went down that rabbit hole, but it was quite something.
I used to get very uncomfortable watching him, and it takes a lot for me to kind of get uncomfortable with that kind of stuff. Like, I just felt bad for him. But then,
who is this?
It's a YouTuber that used to be like super healthy, vegan, was very successful, and then he turned into this like extremely overweight, like just eating everything and tons of it, super unhealthy, just mentally absolutely going down spirals kind of character on YouTube. And everyone in the comments was just like, oh my God, this person's going to die. And then he like disappeared for like half a year or a year or something. And he came back like...
I think it was 2 years.
Or two, but he still had like videos to post that he just like pre-filmed, and he just came back like he started, like skinny, healthy, and basically saying that this whole thing was just like a publicity stunt and like a experiment or something.
Yeah, he was like doing the long con on all his whole audience. It was like,
wow,
pretty crazy, honestly.
Some of his content was fascinating.
Yes.
Very interesting stuff.
That's a very good word for it.
But it worked.
Oh yeah, it definitely worked.
I think it worked.
Yeah, I mean, he was playing with his life there for a while.
Back to the schedule.
That's what we're gonna start doing. We're gonna start eating in front of cameras. We're gonna eat as with discs as our plates.
I think we should just eat peppers with increasing spiciness.
Doing a spice challenge would be funny. Good little vlog segment.
Gosh, I like spicy food, but oh gosh, it really hurts my stomach nowadays.
I think if we ever have a guest on, they have to consume a spicy pepper right before they do the whole breakdown or whatever intro we have.
I like it. Good old little Carolina Reaper before you start the episode.
Something like that. Yeah, I like the schedule here. It's right now it's very hard for me to be like super motivated and excited about another 9 months because I'm in the middle of the season right now. But I'm sure come January, I will be very excited to hit the road again for the 8th year, assuming that all goes well in the fall and in the winter. But yeah, I think I sort of feel bad for the West Coast. I mean, I feel like they have really, ever since we left Arizona and Vegas, they have been...
They've been kind of
shrinking. I mean, there is when was the last time that there was a DGPT event of any sort on Mountain Time Zone was the like match play or whatever in Colorado. Match play
worlds. They're just not like everyone asks why isn't Colorado going to be getting a DGPT event? It's just we don't have any facility or course that could have it. That's just the unfortunate truth. Like I'd love to have an event in Colorado.
I mean, there will be an event in Colorado one day when that facility exists, and one day there will be the right timing of somebody with the right land and somebody who knows about disc golf, and it's in the right area related to Denver that isn't too far into the mountains, but it has like some trees and isn't like a typical front range course. And
that or just somebody who is a disc golfer who's a powerful individual who has access to a good ball golf course, and they let somebody come out and design something good.
Yep.
We play on a lot of those, and Denver, you'd get a lot of people coming to spectate in Colorado. The Colorado disc golf scene's huge. Yep. So it's like, it would be a great place for one. But yeah, West Coast definitely kind of hosed, and but it's so hard because I want to rip into the schedule, but obviously it's like they sent us a little email before the schedule came out just saying like the PDGA kind of dictates a lot by where they place their majors, and then you got to work with all the tournament directors and see what weeks work for the event, so it's like almost impossible to create like a perfect schedule, and I understand that. But if you're in your vehicle driving, it's unbelievable how much mileage you're putting on your car. And the fact that you go to Lynchburg and Charlotte twice in a year, I don't like it. I don't like that. It's like, I think there needs to be a much more cohesive schedule when it comes to driving. Like, why can't we link events three to five hours away together? So you're not like putting, I mean, everyone's getting these newer used vans, and people are putting 20, 30,000 miles on it a year. And like, that's going to just put a huge hole in people's pockets over the long run. And it's really hard to make it sustainable for a lot of people just starting out on tour. That's my biggest criticism, because going from Austin all the way to the West Coast and then just being left out on the West Coast is like, wow, that's tough for anybody who's doing van life. And it's honestly probably not worth it for those people to even go to the West Coast.
I mean, unless you find the A-tier schedule and the Cascade Jomez Challenge worth it out there, then yes, I agree. I mean, for us, you know, OGB as MVP players, I think that's a pretty big requirement.
OTB player too.
Yep. And I always love going there. And also, that trip out west is why I love touring. I mean, I just love making the drive, even if it's long. Like, it is like, it makes me feel alive. I love going
to the Redwoods. It's my favorite part of the year.
Yes, it is basically my favorite part of the year as well. And the only thing that keeps me excited after the West Coast is that we only have less than 2 months until Europe. And so,
right.
So that's like why the first part of the Midwest is like, whatever, it's okay. We're not in the Redwoods anymore, but we're going to Europe soon. We'll be in Norway. But yeah, I need to go and see when Masters Cup is, but I imagine I will still go out there and still have a great time. And so my thought on the schedule is there's two frames of thought here, okay? If you are a American player, so if you're a Simon or I'm not American, an Eagle, yes, but like someone who lives in America.
You're a okay. Green card.
Yes.
Seriously. If you're an American player, with the ability to do what Simon can do financially back and forth, or you have a nice van set up like Eagle or Calvin or whoever, and you like the rest, this is a great schedule for you because there's lots of nice off weeks, like beautifully placed. And if you know the nature around you and you know how to like take advantage of good rest weeks, like you can have a really good stretch here in the beginning of this season. I think most of the season is like spaced out really well, as was this season pretty much. If you are a lower ranking player who kind of takes a lot more of their income off of winnings, this is going to be a schedule that is going to force you to do a lot of searching for A tiers in these off weeks, because that's how you're going to stay on the road. I mean, I remember Harry Chase flew home for 2 weeks and then flew back to the West Coast because there was like a huge break and he went to play two A tiers in New England. Because like, you know, it was like, I asked him, he was like, I can't afford to just sit around for 2 weeks, and not play disc golf tournaments. And for someone of his skill set in that world, that's totally true. And then also for the European players, the people who, you know, have to fly over here, this is also not an amazing schedule. Like, most of the Europeans are looking at this schedule and they don't love it. Except for maybe like Albert and the Europeans who have a decent driving setup in the US and who like to take their off weeks. And I guess Albert is like my perfect example of like the most kind of Americanized of all of them. I mean, he's got an RV and a car and he's always doing stuff. He's fishing. He will take advantage of the off weeks. But, you know, someone like Silva, I already talked to her about it. She's like, you know, I want to fly over here and play like three or four events in a row and then have like 3 weeks off and then go home and then come back. But that's the type of thing that would absolutely suck for all the people who are driving. Nobody wants to like make these treks out for a month and then drive back to wherever they're from and then drive back out to the next stretch of four events.
Sounds like there's no perfect solution.
Exactly. It sounds like if you're a European, you basically have to think like Albert, or you have to pick some events that you're going to skip and do some A-tier researching if you want to fill in the gaps. Like, I mean, I know Mowry is coming to Vermont, which is in 2 weeks, and he qualified for but can't play the DGPT championships because of his mandatory military service that starts that week. But he is filling that off week before USDGC by playing the Carolina Clash, which is a very common thing for the Estonian players to do. Like, I know Kaidi Alsalu and Anneli and Katie Tate, they've done that exact thing. And I think Kristen and Silver have played that A tier for the last like 3 or 4 years because it lines up perfectly. And
yeah,
it used to be a like trainer for tour championship. But now it's obviously not because we're playing tour championship in Lynchburg.
It's a trainer for the new... Or No.
It's not. It's a trainer for nothing this year.
Oh, is it a different course?
It's at Hornets Nest, the Queen City Classic.
So this is at Nevin.
This is at Nevin. Okay. I don't want to be quoted.
Both.
It could be at both. The last year that I played it was at Nevin. So I'm not sure if they, but I have played it in the past. In 2021, I actually played with Vaino and Lukas Rokkonen. I don't know if you guys remember Lukas Rokkonen.
Oh, I remember him.
Of course.
Huge beard. I actually saw him at Worlds this year. But yeah, we played together at Hornets Nest in the Carolina Clash in 2021. Those were the days.
Big forehand guy.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
But it's
thank you to the Disc Golf Pro Tour, because it's without them, we could not even tour. So we are all very grateful for this schedule. But we have a podcast, so it's our job to elaborate our feelings on it.
We have one round to play. No, Joey.
One more round.
I have one more round to play. What are you doing this afternoon, Joey?
I'm going to go and film. You.
Me?
Maybe for a bit.
Which other card are you on? MVP player made it? Paul Kranz?
Mm-hmm.
Is that it, maybe? Raven?
Mm-mm.
Damn, Raven didn't have a good week. No, I think that's it. Conrad didn't have a good week. Struggling.
Tell me about...
The week?
The bokeh.
Oh,
and the aspect, because I watched the vlog.
I think, Eagle, you got that name right. Bokeh. That's how we say it properly.
Bokeh brings me back to my vegan days. There was a brand of burgers called Bokeh Burgers, and it just doesn't sound right. So I think bokeh sounds better.
Yeah, I am extremely thrilled with it. I think it is one of the best discs MVP has ever made. It's kind of exactly what we wanted it to be, which is a disc that is just stable. Like,
literally stable.
Literally just flies like you throw it. There's no gimmicky or finicky things going on. It just does what you make it do.
That's a good episode name. No gimmicky or finicky things.
That's good. Yeah, I was very happy with it. It just looks, I mean I said it in the vlog multiple times, it flies like a slower trail, which is pretty
does it fly like nice. A faster hex.
I would say it could possibly be described as a faster hex too. Yes.
Amazing.
Yeah, I mean we come all from Discmania, so we know the FD, of course. It is pretty similar to that. Eagle, you never really threw FDs, right?
Sometimes. I
liked
the FD2 when I was with them.
Yes, I'm not sure it's a disc for you, but for me and a lot of other players on the team, it definitely is something.
Is it, compared to a Crave, is it deeper in the hand?
It's slightly deeper than a Crave. And it just doesn't flip like a Crave. I would say it's comparable to a Crave, but at the same time, very different.
Okay. I think I have an idea of what it might feel
like. This disc doesn't flip. It, like, drifts.
And it's not a drift.
And then the other one, the 9-speed, the Aspect, I think that was pretty nice, too.
That looks like a disc that I... gonna put right in the bag.
Yeah, I think I would most compare it to a Wrath right out of the bag. Just, I don't know. I don't have enough experience with it yet. I didn't really throw it that much, but I think it's just like a hair more reliable Wrath.
Wrath and Tesla are basically potato potato in my opinion. So, just a small step up, or small, just like a stable Tesla out of the box.
I mean, as hard as you throw, it might just go dead straight and maybe even give you some turn. I don't know. It might be just a bit of a slower boost also, the way the new boost flies.
Probably flies just like my kind of unicorn motion that I have in my bag. It's like very torque resistant that just goes pretty dead straight, but then just checks at the end pretty reliably.
Yeah. Yeah, they'll be fun to mess around with. They will be PDGA approved by Vermont. So hopefully MVP can send me a couple to give to other players and have some fun with them in Vermont. I think those discs could be useful on those tracks.
Totally. Yeah. I want to throw the Aspect at Brewster. I can already think of a bunch of shots for that type of disc.
It'll be fun testing new stuff. Always fun. I can't wait for the day where my entire bag is Simon line. I think that's about 2 years away.
Yeah, they're doing two drops, or they just, because usually it's been, they've been working on one at a time, and they have two ready for you?
No, I don't think the Aspect will be publicly available for a while. I think the Bokeh will be coming for the MVP Open, and Aspect potentially might be a Gyropalooza box release, but we're not sure yet.
But still, that's like in pretty quick succession based off of like the Simon line so far.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we started planning these discs already like 2 years ago, so.
Are you already working on the next one?
Oh, yes. Yeah,
I make requests.
My throwing putter is gonna be nice. I don't think. I guess I shouldn't really say the names yet for all the discs that are coming because I don't know the rules.
Let me just ask this: is it gonna be straight or is it gonna be entropy like?
Right between those two would be pretty nice.
So you want an envy.
I don't know yet. I'll I think I want Joey, what do I want?
I think you want
the flight. This is how discs are made, ladies and gentlemen.
You want the flight of the pixel, but the feel of the proxy.
What if I...
Isn't that just a proxy?
Dude, I don't... It's tricky because I feel like MVP has so many great throwing putters. I think the only thing that I would think you could add is to take what the stabilizer is and make it shallower.
And a little. What about a slower tempo?
That's what the stabilizer is.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, but you make it a little more shallow. That's exactly what I was just saying. So you take the stabilizer, which is the streamlined kind of like a harp. I throw it a little bit. And then you just kind of chop off like 2 centimeters off of the depth. And it's like, I don't know, maybe like an A5.
Cool. Yeah, I'm in. I'm going to listen to what MVP has to say about it and... I never really know what I want. That's one of my big issues in life.
Can you make like the flippiest disc ever?
That is definitely also something I've been thinking about that I want.
That'd be amazing.
MVP doesn't really have something crazy understable.
No, I think you have to make a disc that does a new flight that has never been seen before. You need to somehow redefine
the tilt 2.0, just the complete
something
opposite.
Something that can, well, just something that is actually so useful, or not useful, but in some rare situations, it's like the best disc for that shot. What like, without a doubt, it's the best disc.
You could have a disc that's so understable that like Simahawk's on command.
It's just barrel rolls.
Uh huh.
It barrel rolls, but then actually flies.
Yeah. No.
Oh, that would be so crazy.
I don't know if I'm ready for another meme disc. Oh, I like the idea of it, but I think of the trick shots
you could do. Those would be some of the nastiest aces. Barrel roll around the tree and in.
I'm going to email Chad right after we are done with this phone call.
It needs to happen.
It might have to. What's a good name for a barrel roll disc? Okay, silence.
What's a camera term?
Can it just be the flip?
Is that a camera term?
Sure.
What about the flash? Oh, that's already a disc-graph disc.
The flip.
Is the zoom a disc?
I know I had zoom written down, but I think there was some issue with it. There was like some other smaller brand that had some with a zoom.
I got nothing. There's something out there.
There's something out there. AI will help.
That would be crazy.
Well, do we have anything else we want to talk about? Do we have emails? Do we got
Well, let's at least touch a little bit on this week of tournament. Just like the course, the Great Lakes Open. I only want to say the only thing I want to talk about. Well, that, but the, no, there's only really one thing I wanted to talk about, which was that yesterday, Ricky Wysocki had, did you see what he did, Eagle? You want to guess?
I live so under a rock that I have no idea. All right,
okay, so you're going to take a guess here. It has to be one of the rarer thing has ever happened in professional disc golf. Unintentionally.
Is when it a it, shot?
No, it's a scorecard.
Is he keeping a paper scorecard?
It's not in reference to how he was keeping his scorecard.
No, this it's a crazy thing just about his score.
His score.
Like, and how he got there.
Did he have an ace?
No.
No.
Okay, I have literally no idea.
Okay, I'll give you one hint. He shot 12 under.
12 under. Six down on the front, six down on the back.
No. Like, it's like less. I guess this, it's the course sort of is like
par
that.
66.
Oh. Are we talking a number here?
Sort of.
Is this going to make some people?
No.
No. So okay, more hints. How many over par does a par 66 mean?
Okay. Over par.
So if every hole, like how many par fours is a par 66?
Okay, so 54, so 12.
Okay.
Okay, you're getting closer.
Now you're getting closer. And what did we say? How many? What did Ricky shoot?
He shot us 12 down, so 54.
Okay, so what are we trying to tell you with that?
How do you think he got to the 54?
He had no twos.
Correct.
And he just birdied all the par fours.
And correct. So that would mean that he also, not only did he have no twos.
He had no bogeys?
He had.
Correct.
And so what does that mean?
Shut 12 down.
That means he has
all the par fours.
It means he has all threes. 18 threes on his scorecard.
Oh.
He only took threes for the entire round.
Wow.
Which is absolutely insane on this course, just to say that.
Mind-blowing. To not birdie any of the par threes and birdie every single par four. To
and
take
eagle
only
the par five.
And eagle the par five.
I'm not at the course right now, so it's like, I wasn't thinking like that, but wow. Yeah, I forgot that was a par five. That's crazy. Wow.
I think that's a once-in-a-lifetime kind of thing for the whole sport. No one's ever going to do that again.
Somehow that is going to be like a mini lore now. Unintentionally, like that round is going to just like exist alongside Paul's 18 down as like two of the crazier rounds ever at the Great Lakes Open.
Totally.
What's funny is that Aaron Gossage. Too? No, Aaron Gossage shot 13 down yesterday.
Whoa.
with a bogey on hole one.
Good round start with a bogey.
So
true.
We have the Discraft Great Lakes Open. This was my last Elite Series tournament of the year, and I had my best. Well, yeah, right. But I'm just going to consider it my last of the year unless. Yeah, I guess unless something crazy happens. Look at Silva. There she goes. 5 down through 10. We have a 2-horse race in the FPO right now. Missy and Holland through 7. But, I had my best round of the season by a mile to start out the...
Round one.
That was pretty cool. And, round 2 and 3, just... unfortunate that I... basically, all my practice was in the calm, and I really built a good game plan for that. And I think a lot of courses change in the wind, but my goodness, does that course change the discs and your bag and your mindset in the wind. And I think like as a lower power player, even when I'm 100%, and I'm coming back still, like, especially on those last 2 rounds, which were my 7th and 8th rounds on the toboggan. I definitely would have liked to have had some extra power. I just think it helps you throw more stable stuff in those windy conditions. And you can really, I think there's just an advantage to being a big thrower when the wind picks up, especially on a course like that. So, did not manage great the last 2 days, but definitely happy with the first round, and it's nice to know that there's still that game.
You still in got there. It, Joey. You
there's still some. Yeah, I mean, there's something. So, I might try to play Carolina Clash as well. We'll see. I have to look at the A-tier schedule after this off week that I'm going to spend in Canada as I make my way to Vermont. I enjoyed some of the changes that they had on the course. I think that, I don't know, I think some holes could be better personally. Do you want to talk about any of the course design that you like or dislike about this course? I personally do not like hole 4. I think that tee shot is really luck based, and I really wish that we would put a tee pad somewhere else. And
that was hung around for a long time. And
I don't understand it. I like the second shot. I think it's cool. It's challenging, but there's just like no predictable way to get to a spot. I think that there's like hole 8. I think that teeing area, like I'll never understand these tee pads that just have like this crazy drop off behind them that like, or not like drop off, but just like there's no like gravel, and your whole start of your run up is just like the first 2 steps are like walking up a staircase almost to like get onto the tee pad. And I just don't like hole 8 for that reason. I want extension on the right side there so I can throw the aggressive shot. I just feel like I'm dancing down the right side of that tee pad to throw that tee shot.
Yeah, I think overall the course is fine. I've always been a fan of this track. I think a 4-round event out here is kind of pushing it for me, especially with like 2 or 3 practice rounds. At the end of it, you're just like so unbelievably over it. I wouldn't say it's necessarily a course I want to play 4 times in a row. I think it's pretty good.
I guess you won't be playing it 4 times in a row until 2027. Because for the World Championships, there'll only be 3 rounds here.
Worlds isn't here next year?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Next year, you'll only play it 3 times because two rounds are at Black Locust.
Oh, I can't wait. Yeah, you're right. That's so nice.
You don't have to play 4 times until 2027.
Well, tomorrow, I got an invite to the Urban Disc Golf Experience. I don't know how to actually say it properly, but it's like the Disc Golf YouTube thing.
You nailed it.
Which is going to be downtown Detroit, which I've never been downtown Detroit. And I'm very curious. Our shoot starts at 7 a.m. tomorrow morning. And I'm going to go do that. It's like a 6-hour shoot. And then I have to go straight to the airport from there. So I'm going to be... all the way done. by the time I get home on Monday wow. night. But I'm excited for it. It's another new thing for me. I'm looking forward to, I don't know what this I'm going to throw. I don't really want to throw my bag on concrete, I think.
Do you want some backups?
I might need something.
I'll give you some stuff. I have plenty of stuff you can use. I definitely have beat up putters.
Yeah, that might be. Actually, I'm going to retire my putters after this tournament, so I might just use my putters.
Also, Eagle, I think at this point we've gone too far into this podcast without me telling you that Simon needs to show you his haircut.
I've seen
I tried showing him earlier, but he didn't say anything.
He's been like hiding off camera all podcast.
I'm not hiding. I'm just comfortable. It looks ridiculous.
I love it.
I wanted like a... what do you call it?
Cool guy haircut?
No. I wanted like a half mullet, half mohawk kind of thing, but then it all turned out differently because the lady who did it didn't really know what was going on. So that's what's going on. I don't know. Half the time I look at it, I'm like, okay, I can pull it off. And then the other half of the time I'm like, oh my God, what did he do?
I like it.
Eagle is no stranger to interesting haircuts.
The only thing I'll say is I wouldn't expect it from you.
This is way outside my thing. This is not who I am yet.
But it's who you're going to be.
It might be who I'm becoming.
What else do you need to add to your style?
I don't know. It's an evolution. I can't predict it. It just happens.
I love it.
Maybe I do a tattoo. Think that his hairstyle pairs well with the Hey Dudes that he wears. Those definitely match.
I don't wear Hey Dudes. I haven't but had you them used in to. 2 years.
You need to they get
definitely
a new
don't
pair.
Match though. That haircut definitely doesn't match the Crocs you wear.
Fair enough.
I have a question for Simon.
Okay, one more question.
What is your favorite animal that you have seen driving through the Metro Park to your tea time?
All I ever see is drive.
What?
Stupid. Joey said, what was your favorite animal you've seen driving through the Metro Park? You can interpret it different
animals
way.
On drive. Yeah, I see. I only see the cranes. I don't really see any other animals. Maybe the swans? I'll say swans. Swans are majestic.
I've seen a couple deer. I've seen the cranes, which are my favorite. I just like... We saw some wild turkeys this morning. We saw a great blue heron. We saw some swans. So there's a lot of amazing wildlife at the Kensington Metro Park. And
have you
I
seen
will say
Swanson.
Swanson.
Yeah.
I have seen some of Swanson. He's good. We were distracted. We were looking at the time of
I need to go to lunch.
Recording time. Yeah.
I tee off in 2 hours.
I need to go to breakfast.
Should we answer one email today, or should we end it?
Let's next episode we record, let's do an all email episode.
Oh my God.
All email?
We've literally never done really an email. I think we should just next week we all is an off week for everyone and let's just do a email episode.
Mail time.
I love it.
All right. I'm down with that.
Last thing I'll say, because it was the topic of last episode, was camping. Mm. I went camping. It was car camping, but it was tremendous. I loved it. It was so beautiful. I saw a moose. I was up at around 10,000 feet. And I would say it was probably the happiest I've been all year.
Why did you do it?
because I love going into the mountains since I'm from Colorado, especially where I went in the mountains. I used to go there as a kid. It was the Brainerd Lake Day Use area in the Indian Peaks above Boulder, Colorado, and did a little bit of hiking, made some steak around a campfire, ate a salad, slept in a tent, and it was glorious.
That sounds glorious.
I had a great time, and I'm looking forward to the time where I can do it all again.
Well, tomorrow. Let's end on that note.
Sweet.
Well, thank you all for listening. Thank you all for the kind words when I see you out at the tournaments, because I appreciate it. Not you guys, the fans. The fans say nice things to me.
The grinders.
And, yeah, I...
Should we call our fans the grinders now? Like pepper grinders? Because they're technically like, they're like grinding. Sometimes they're like grinding. If we're the pepper, then they're grinding us when they're listening.
Wow. I mean, I thought they were the Scoville units.
They can be, we can have multiple names for them.
Yeah, actually someone yesterday gave me a hot sauce at the signature session.
They shout out saucers. To
Feel the Burn Hot Sauce.
They could be the Flying Saucers.
What about the Bernies?
The Bernies.
That's too political.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
All right, everybody. That's been episode 25 of Crush Pepper. Thank you for listening, and we will speak to you next time.
Au revoir.
Peace. Oh, we never gave an episode name.
Oh.
Finicky and Gimmicky?
Yeah, I think Will would have picked that up.
Yeah, finicky and gimmicky.